Sports. We have another very special guest with us today, Jess Root, managing editor of Cards Wire and host of the Arizona podcast, Rise Up Red Sea, covering all things Cardinals.
Jess comes on to the show. We talk about DeAndre Hopkins, his impact to the air raid offense, Kyler Murray's second year, and what defensive help the Cardinals got to support Chandler Jones. So tune in right now.
Good.
Good.
Good job.
We want to step out to Arizona and get your input on the Cardinals. And they had a busy offseason. Can you kick things off with the trade that sent DJ to the Texans for DeAndre Hopkins? Tell us your thoughts and what you think.
Well, it was a major coup. The fact that the Cardinals, one of their main offseason priorities was to somehow get rid of David Johnson's contract. They needed the cap space. And also upgrade the receiver room. And they were able to basically do it in the same deal. There was so much talk about how the Cardinals would have to eat some of that salary or add a draft pick, give David Johnson and a draft pick to some team to get rid of him. But it ended up looks like, you know, for whatever reason, the Texans decided to do it. I like to look at it kind of as two deals in one, essentially. And I think the Cardinals basically win both deals. Essentially, they got a fourth round pick for David Johnson. You know, if you think about, he was a third round pick, so they get a fourth, but they acquired Kenyon Drake a year ago for a fifth round pick. I was if they could have managed to recoup that, I thought it would have been a win. They get a fourth round pick essentially for David Johnson, and they trade their second rounder this year and a fourth rounder next year for DeAndre Hopkins. So not only that, so they get DeAndre Hopkins, one of the top three receivers in the league, not give up a single first round pick. Now, granted, there was the contract thing there in Houston, so that makes it a little bit different. But he's still got 3 years on his deal. He's happy to be here. He immediately impacts that the receiver room and the passing offense, because before, when you were having Christian Kirk, he was drawing the attention of number one corners last year when he was healthy. Now you've got DeAndre drawing that attention as the number one guy. And then you push Christian Kirk and Larry Fitzgerald being covered by number two, number three guys, which means all three of those, we already know that Hopkins can win against ones. Mm-hmm. Christian Kirk can win against ones too, but now he's going to be able to go against lesser skilled guys. That's going to open things up. They now replace David Johnson full-time with Kenyon Drake. And Drake, they use basically the cap space they saved in trading DJ to pay Kenyon this year for 1 year. And he was great last year in his eight games. So basically the offseason was kicked off with a boom.
Yeah. And so I'm a 49ers fan, originally from the Bay Area. Big Ben, who I think his internet's acting up, he'll be back in a little bit, is a Seahawks fan. And Ben texted me and he's like, Bill O'Brien's so stupid. Like, what are you talking about? And he told me the trade. I'm like, there's no way that happened. Like, there's no way they could have done that. But I clicked on ESPN, and sure enough, you know, they had traded for Hopkins. And it was just mind-blowing and exciting to see, like, the West is just getting that much stronger with the addition of Hopkins.
Absolutely. So
my next question is how do you think he's going to fit into Kliff's air raid offense?
Well, he's a big-time receiver. Kingsbury has – now, granted, they were big on running the ball in the second half of last year because that's what they did well. That is a passing offense, number one, first and foremost. It opens up everything because you get a guy who can win one-on-one in short, in the middle of the field, in short passes, down the field. It just really opens everything up. I think this offense, with the continuity with the rest of the unit and the addition of Hopkins, what it really does is the running game was already good. The passing game should really open up. And so this offense should be formidable. It should be ideally, this should be a top 10 offense this year. Then we move to the defensive side of the ball. That's going to depend a lot on that.
Yeah. So Kyler Murray was offensive player of the year as a rookie going into his second year now. Based on what you saw, What improvements do you think he needs to make to keep elevating his status and move up into a tier one quarterback?
Well, he made improvements late in the year. Now, he was more prone to the turnover late in the year, but he was better about getting rid of the ball, making quicker decisions. When you look at it, he got sacked, I think it was 48 times last year. You can attribute at least half of those to him alone because he wasn't processing things quickly. He still performed at a very high level in terms of rookie performances. You look at the type of season that he had, it was historic when you look at rookie quarterbacks in many ways. He set team records. He set league records for rookies. But now he knows the offense. He's seen the speed of the NFL for a full year. He's gone through that full season. And so things now get to slow down. And if history at all, now the shortened offseason, the lack of practice reps in the second this offseason is going to be, we're going to see what that does. But we've seen second-year quarterbacks all explode. Like you go back to Jared Goff in year two, Carson Wentz in year two, even Mitchell Trubisky in year two, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson. You always see a jump, a significant improvement with any talented quarterbacks from year one to year two. And he already, I want to put this kind of in perspective. Kyler Murray's season in terms of passing yards was the seventh best in Cardinals history.
Wow.
As a rookie. Now, that doesn't say much for the Cardinals' history with quarterbacks, but he's up there around guys like, not far from guys like Kurt Warner and Carson Palmer and some of the numbers that they put up. So he already had the seventh best passing yardage in a single season passing total in Cardinals' history. He set a Cardinals record for rushing yards by a quarterback. Throwing for with 3,700 yards last year where the passing game didn't click all the time, he should easily throw for more than 4,000 yards, about 25 touchdowns at least. And I think 500 to 700 rushing yards is really with kind of the sweet spot, kind of like what Russell Wilson produces in the running game as well.
Yeah, I mean, you could say he probably has the best supporting cast in the NFC West with those three receivers and Kenyon Drake, and he's getting another year of Cliff's playbook where Cliff is probably going to open it up a little bit more. So it's going to be very exciting watching him grow and develop and seeing what the Cardinals can do next year.
Yeah, they're exciting. There's that. I'm not going to predict that they will, but they have the potential to make this type of jump the 49ers did a year ago. I'm not going to say they're going to, but they, if everything goes well, you could see that type of jump.
Yes, definitely. So you hit on it earlier. Let's talk a little bit about defense. Let's move on the other side of the ball. The Cardinals signed two linebackers. They signed Devondre Campbell and Devon Kennard. Can you talk a little bit about how you see them fitting into the defensive scheme?
They immediately upgrade the defensive front seven. So they go from having, well, Terrell Suggs was fine the first half of the year, but then his production disappeared over the last few weeks. And he was clearly, holding on to the back end of a career. So you go from washed up Terrell Suggs and Hassan Reddick, who moved positions again, and you upgrade that to Devon Kennard. Now, this will be the first time in his career he's going to play actually what is his true natural position. He's been a 4-3 outside backer for his entire career with the Giants and the Lions. And so he has a lot of experience. He's had 7 sacks each of the last 2 years, but he's really built to be, and he was an edge rusher in high school and in college. So you now get to put him at really what he was probably built for as a 3-4 edge guy, where he will get to rush the passer more. He's very strong at throwing. He's got strong hands. He can drop and do a little bit in coverage. He is not overly, he's not great as a passer. He's productive, but he makes a great complement for Chandler Jones on the other side. And now at inside linebacker, you go from Joe Walker and Hassan Reddick, Joe Walker, bless his heart, he's never been much more than a special teams type player, really good guy to have on your team. But if he's starting at linebacker, you're going to have trouble because he's very limited physically in his abilities. Now you add Devondre Campbell, who's super productive. He's very athletic. I don't know if he's the answer at covering tight ends, but it will be so much better than the options last year. Jordan Hicks, Devondre Campbell, that now that those four linebackers are productive, you can look at that and you can say there's no talent deficiency. You've got Chandler Jones on one edge, Devon Kennard on the other. Then you've got Jordan Hicks and Devondre Campbell. And on top of that, now they drafted Isaiah Simmons in the first round. Now they're going to have to find ways to get playing time for all three of those inside backers. It's going to be fun to see how that goes.
Yeah, and they also picked up Jordan Phillips from the Bills. So the defense is definitely headed in the right direction. So you talked about Isaiah Simmons. He was my favorite player in the draft because he plays so many different positions. He's like a Swiss Army knife. He even said, if you pick me, it's like having three extra players on the squad because I can play, you know, I can rush, I can be a linebacker, I can drop off and play safety. Where do you see him, you know, fitting into that defense?
His initial role is going to be as their, is he's going to be their Mo linebacker. So he's going to be an inside backer in nickel slash dime. So he's going to be their passing down linebacker, at least initially. If he's good enough, he may take snaps away from Hicks or Campbell, but it looks like Campbell will be in there for base packages, and Simmons, they will use either a combination of him and Campbell, or they've got a kind of a NASCAR speed rush package where they only use one interior rusher and they go with five linebackers. They might see a little bit of that where you've got Jordan Phillips on the interior and then five linebackers around him, including Campbell and Simmons with Kennard or Reddick and Hicks and Jones. But he's going to do a lot of the same things, except he's not going to have to learn the other positions. What he did at Clemson, he learned the positions every single week. So he might go out to the slot to cover a tight end, but he's going to be doing everything is going to be from the role of an inside backer. They're not going to really play him at safety, at least as a rookie. He's going to learn the inside backer position and all the roles. Now they're still using a blitz. They'll still use him to cover tight ends. They'll still use him to kind of recover running backs, but it's all going to be within that context. So he doesn't have to learn all the different positional schemes for the different levels of the defense.
Yeah. We were trying to think of a player comp for him, but we couldn't really think of anyone because he plays so many different positions.
Derwin James is a really good comp, except Derwin James plays more back end. He's just as versatile and it's almost unfair. It is unfair to put that sort of reputation when he was so dynamic, even as a rookie. Simmons, he's not going to play every snap like James did, and that's going to be the difference. But he's going to be kind of a cross between Derwin James and Tyrann Mathieu. If Cardinals fans know that, but he's built like a Carlos Dansby in terms of his length and movement ability.
Yeah, Jess, I apologize for the video here. I'm up in Seattle, so it might be the Wi-Fi. I'm out on an island a little bit. But I have been down to Arizona a few times. My background is actually, I was telling Kay Wynn, the most futile game I've ever been to, or maybe in the history of the NFL, where it was a 6-6 tie due to some missed field goals. And that was a heartbreaker for us. As a Hawks fan, I enjoy myself going down there. Love the podcast. Let's talk about the NFC West matchups. And I don't know if I read this right or counted this correctly, but did I see that the Cardinals only play five teams that made the playoffs last year, and that's inclusive of the Hawks and Niners?
They play the 49ers and the Seahawks. They play Buffalo. They play New England. And I'm sure, I didn't look, but yeah, they've got a fairly favorable schedule. They've got a schedule that you can like. It gets because they've got three road games right in a row. Mm-hmm. That's gonna be tough after they play early on. But I like the matchups. What's tough about the division is that they're talented across the board. Obviously, the 49ers. Yeah. What they did last year speaks for itself. Seahawks, we're going to have questions on defense. That defense is nothing what it used to be. But as long as you got Russell Wilson at quarterback, they are so consistent. And the Rams, even though with the overhaul, you could go one of two ways. They could spark. And I know a lot of people think that they might falter even more. It's going to be, well, they came off, they had a disappointing Super Bowl hangover with losing the Super Bowl. I don't expect the 49ers to kind of go through the same thing because of the way they're built. But I do wonder what the loss of DeForest Buckner will do up front. I know Javon Kinlaw might develop into something special, but when you lose someone as important as Buckner in that interior, that's going to change things. Now, they definitely have talent up front as well, and they've got a good back end now. That defense is really, really nice. So you've got the Seattle offensive weapons, but they're stronger offensively now. Kyle Shanahan is really good with his offensive scheme. San Francisco's defense is great. The Cardinals offense is on the rise. The Rams depends on Jared Goff. I don't know what to think of the Rams this year at all, because they could go one. I don't think anyone does, Jess.
Right.
This division is going to be super competitive, and adding that extra wild card team is going to be really intriguing. I can see this division, everyone having between, honestly, 7-11 games or even 8-11 games wins between all four teams.
Yeah, I think with the rise of the Cardinals, right, it's brought on this idea that a lot of people have talked about the NFC West being one of the strongest conferences in the NFL. And I think with the rise of the Cardinals, it's only going to get stronger. It's rare you see a franchise like the Rams go from Super Bowl to where they may be this season so quickly. I think that speaks to the depth of the conference. Question for you, Cliff Kingsbury's in his second season. Have you been to his house?
I have not been to his house, but everyone has seen it. It is something.
So Arians and Wisenhunt in their second season made the playoffs. Does that happen for Cliff this year?
Well, if you look historically, if you look at the way they started, because the Cardinals did pull within, they got to, I think, 3-3, or maybe it was 3-4 on first-year coaches with the team that have gone 3-4, that have won three of their first, well, they went 3-3-1, won three of their first seven games, usually make the playoffs the next year. I mean, so we've got a little bit of history there. It shows that they're making progress. I'd like to think they'll make the playoffs. In my personal predictions, I don't have them quite. I think I have them as a nine-win team that will be on the fringe. But I can't personally, like, as a fan, because I've grown up here in Arizona. I've watched the Cardinals play since 1989. I paid attention to them back in the days of Gary Hogaboom and Tom Tufa and Tim Rosenbaugh. So I remember all those days. As a fan, I'm saying, yeah, they're gonna win everything. They're gonna make the playoffs. It's gonna be something special. I buy into everything Patrick Peterson says, but as the analyst side of me says, that's crazy to make that sort of jump. So I'm gonna say they are a 9-win team and probably just miss the playoffs, because the NFC is pretty talented across the board.
I agree. Again, especially in that tough division. Hey, Jess. Kyle and I talked about a particular player out of the Pac-12 that we liked. We called him Trace Dos Eno Benjamin. What kind of role does he play in the offense this year, if any?
He's not going to have – he will have a real limited – I think back to 2018, Chase Edmonds' role. Because they believe in Kenyon Drake, and Cliff Kingsbury likes having a workhorse. He really, really likes Chase Edmonds, and I think they see a potential future as him as a number one back, or at least a complimentary back. That doesn't leave very many carries or snaps for Eno. Eno's going to be – he's going to have to make his money on special teams as a rookie. I think he'll get a few snaps here or there. He might get 3 to 5 snaps a game with a chance to do a few things. I'm a huge fan of him. I'm an Arizona State alum. I've had season tickets since 2007, so Sun Devil pride runs here, but you know, I believe in what he in the ability that he has, and I hope that he can take them. And such an intelligent player as well, on the field and off the field, that makes you believe that he will do what it needs he needs to be to have a successful NFL career. If he does anything offensively, as long as he's contributing on his special teams, that's really that anything he does on offense is really kind of gravy.
Jess, where does Kliff stack up against the current coaches in the NFC West? Is there still skepticism about bringing him aboard and the big jump from where he was at Texas Tech? Or is there believers and do you see him becoming maybe a McVay and Shanahan who've got their teams to Super Bowls pretty early in their career?
I think it's a good comp for him. I think the initial wonder whether he was qualified or not was he proved that he belongs in the league. I think he proved that with the adjustments that he made, the work that he did with Kyler Murray. It proved, obviously, that he didn't do everything perfectly, but I think he proved that he belongs in the league. And I'll be honest, I kind of liked the fact that he didn't come in to the NFL as a super successful college coach. Mm-hmm. Because the guys that are highly successful at the college level come in, say, a Chip Kelly or a Nick Saban, or these guys who come up to the pros, and they have an ego about their way. Kliff, whether it's because of just his personality and his approach to football, or the fact that he wasn't a big-time coach, like, he battled for recruits. I'm like, he is so thrilled he doesn't have to recruit anymore. Now he gets to the pros, and he was willing to listen to other coaches on his staff. He was willing to take the direction that the general manager, and so now he's building things his way instead of coming in with a Chip Kelly ego that I'm going to change the league. So he's saying, I'm going to change the league, but he's not saying it up front. And so I think that he proved himself very capable a year ago. And what that turns into, I think he has the mind to be a McVay or a Shanahan. And it's going to come down to the decisions that he and his staff make on defense as well.
Yeah, and if you think of, I talk about the offensive side of ball a lot, where Kliff has a lot of influence. And I think the bets that he's made already, where going out and getting Kyler, you know, number one. And then a lot of people said Drake wasn't that great of a back in Miami. He paid off pretty well. So I got to imagine the sentiment in Phoenix is pretty good in terms of Kliff. Question for you, Jess, worst case scenario. Do you see any, what's one facet of the team where if it doesn't turn out for the positive, we could see a regression with the Cardinals?
Well, one would be the offensive line if it gets hit with injuries. They honestly, as you look at the 50 sacks they allowed and you're like, oh, they're terrible. They dealt with issues at right tackle. They had continuity on really four of their five of the five positions and were solid. They were great in the run game. And if you look at passing metrics, they were also pretty good in pass protection. But if they get hit with injuries, if the right tackle position doesn't settle, you could see some prop, which will lead to Murray having to make quicker decisions. Yeah. But really, the major concerns are on the defensive side of the ball, just because they were so atrocious against the pass last year. We think passer rating. And you think passer rating in the 90s, that's good. And you creep up to just over 100, that's elite. The Cardinals, I believe they gave up a passer rating on the season of about 110, meaning every quarterback they faced was a Hall of Famer. Everybody was a Hall of Famer.
If you're a one-day fantasy player, you're starting whoever the Cardinals
That's exactly what you did. So the defense is the huge question, and especially with the additions. Now they're betting on the back end of their defense. Now, it's in fairness, their defense was decimated last year. They had six different defensive linemen they were counting on that either were Robert Kambici and got cut because he was bad, Darius Filon, who they signed, who ended up, you know, getting into law trouble by pulling a gun on a stripper. He got cut and arrested. And then injuries across the board. were the issue. Then you lose Patrick Peterson for 6 weeks. Robert Alford goes down for the entire season. So instead of even if Patrick Peterson, they knew about the suspension, if it's Robert Alford, Tremaine Brock, and Byron Murphy as your opening day cornerbacks, you can live with that for 6 weeks. But when you're going Tremaine Brock as your number one cornerback, you're going to have trouble. And 49ers fans, you know Tremaine. He's a guy that's good to have on your team. You don't want him as your number one corner. Yeah. You do not want him. DJ Swearinger was an absolute – he was terrible at safety. And his play just completely disappeared. He went from being, when he was with Washington, a borderline Pro Bowler to just completely useless in the first four games of last season. So they have the same back end, but you get Peterson and Alford back. That puts Byron Murphy, who played a ton last year, playing right in the slot, where that's actually where they believe he'll be really good. Buda Baker's a Pro Bowler. Jalen Thompson, you could upgrade them, but they really like what Jalen Thompson did at safety as a rookie last year. And he was a supplementary pick, so he was learning on the fly as a rookie. The defensive front, if that front seven can do what it on paper, it is so much better just by adding Jordan Phillips, by adding Devon Kennard, by adding Devondre Campbell, by adding Isaiah Simmons. That front seven is significantly better on paper. Instead of a context for last year, the 5-win team that they were, that defense was given a lead. So Kyler Murray and the offense gave the defense a lead in the fourth quarter or overtime on three occasions where they gave up in the final possession. So they had a lead in the overtime against Detroit. Mm-hmm. They had a lead against Tampa Bay. And they had a lead in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And the defense, they make one stop in each of those games. They're 8-8. Against that first half, that's how that Halloween San Francisco game. If they make one stop, they were down by it. They were down by 3 or 4. They make one stop. The belief was is that they were going to be able to score and potentially tie or take the lead in that game. So the defense was atrocious. If they had been just below average, this was a 7-8 win team. If the offense does what it should do, become a top 10 offense, and the defense is just middle of the road, they'll be competitive in every single game, and this will be a fun team to watch. They just have to get from being the worst defense to not terrible.
Yeah. Good way to put it. A lot of Cougs and Huskies in that backfield too, or that
yes,
secondary, which is interesting.
The Washington program.
Yeah, I saw that. I did. Everyone, Byron Murphy, Buda Baker. Interesting to see. All right, Kaywin, you want to get in the West Coast swing?
Yeah, Jess, we do a little West Coast swing where we rotate the questions. There's no right or wrong answer. It's just kind of off the cuff, and it's the way we like to have a little fun at the end. So I'll kick us off with the first question. As an ASU alum, who will win more football games next year, your Sun Devils or your Cardinals?
Ooh. That's a good question. Cardinals have
Herm listens to us too, Jess.
Yes. Herm's great. Herm is so great. The Cardinals should win 9 games. The Sun Devils.
Jaden Daniels.
He's good. Okay. I'm gonna push on this one. I think they're both a 9-win team.
That's fair. Okay.
That's fair. Hey, Jess, you got a you know, you're a family man. You got a lot. You write for what's your Cardinals game day routine? Cards are on, home or away. What are you doing each morning?
Okay, home game. Since I cover I am credentialed media as part of what I do. So I get to the stadium. Well, aside from my morning writing. So I get up early. I get some game preview stuff up, some things, some content up on the site first. I'm at the stadium 2 hours before kickoff. Where I get set up and I eat, and then I write a couple more pregame stories, cover the game. But that's if I'm at the stadium. At home, kind of the same thing, except that I don't have to travel out to Glendale to do that. But I've got a computer in my lap, tweeting, writing, producing content after the game, producing more content. it's really kind of a fun thing to do, growing up a Cardinals fan and then developing, you know, taking a platform that I have and to be able to be one of the online voices that there are for following the Cardinals.
So we moved back to Arizona State. It's fall. We're in Tempe. It's me and Big Ben. We don't have tickets to the game. We can't get in. Where should we go? What's the best place to watch a game in Tempe?
There's a lot of good places, but I'll give you my personal favorite for, because he's a fellow Sun Devil alum, a guy that I know a lot. It's the College Bar down there in Tempe.
Okay.
Hey, Jess, could you see Larry Fitzgerald staying around to beat Jerry Rice's all-time record? Catch record?
Maybe. If the Cardinals will pay him $11 million every year, he'll keep playing. Because he knows, like, if that $11 to $12 million is kind of his price, but he will keep coming back if they're willing to pay him that much. And maybe it'll take about 3 years to do it, of performing at a high level. But if I had to guess, this is probably his last year, especially with D-Hop now in the lineup. It kind of allows him to step away and Hopkins and Kirk kind of take over. But it wouldn't completely surprise. He's not going to play for anyone else. It's just going to be a matter of whether the Cardinals are willing to pay him $11 million a year to come back.
Yeah. So Kyler Murray, he is considered by some a top NFL quarterback fantasy-wise. What round would you tell our listeners to draft him in to get the best value out of him?
Honestly, if you're looking to quarterbacks, he's worth the first-round pick. You got Lamar Jackson, you got Patrick Mahomes. If those two are off the board, don't doubt. I mean, Murray's money there, because the passing numbers are going to go up. They're going to score touchdowns, and that running aspect as well is money.
So if I have him in a keeper league for the fifth round, take it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If Cliff doesn't deliver, could you see Big Herm step in with Marvin Lewis? It's a short commute.
Probably not. I think Herm is on his, like, he is playing himself, he's coaching himself into kind of a office job coach at ASU is what he's. I don't see him getting back into the NFL. I think he really likes what he's doing at the college level, and he really likes developing his coaches. I mean, Kingsbury's got at minimum two more years as it is, based on what we saw. He's got this year and then another year. If they're not, then they might make a change after that. But they're going all in with Cliff and Kyler.
So if we look at some of Kyler's quarterback peers from the draft class of 2019, and you have to start one, bench one, and cut one for the upcoming season, it's Drew Lock, Daniel Jones, and Dwayne Haskins. You got to start one, bench one, and cut one just for the upcoming season.
Starting Kyler, benching Daniel Jones, cutting Haskins.
All right, that's perfect.
Jess, last question. What is your favorite all-time Cardinal moment, Cardinal history?
Well, it has, honestly, the Super Bowl. Even though they lost at the end, the Santonio Holmes catch broke my heart. But that feeling when Larry Fitzgerald took the ball into the end zone and they had a lead with a couple of minutes left, there is nothing, nothing that I've ever experienced like that. And it came crashing back down in a hurry. But the fact that we're watching the game and suddenly we're going to win the Super Bowl, and it didn't happen, but that's what you felt like. The Cardinals, this Morbin franchise forever, is going to win the Super Bowl. Second on my list would be, and I saw this in person, was their 2015 playoff game against the Packers, when it looked like, oh crap, they're going to give it up, because they didn't play real well. Aaron Rodgers, two Hail Marys that got them to the, but then the Larry Fitzgerald catch and run, and then the Larry Fitzgerald touchdown. I mean, Fitz has got a number of memories that are right there for my fandom.
A lot of highlights. I've been through that demise. I was actually outside of the Glendale Stadium when the Hawks lost to the Patriots. I couldn't get it. I was at a bar. So I feel you there, Jess. I feel you there.
You know, I don't feel bad for you.
I'll take that.
All right, Jess, can you tell our listeners where to find your content online, how to follow you, and catch up on the latest and greatest Cards news?
Well, the site's pretty easy. It's one of the USA Today NFL Wire sites, cardswire.com. You can find my podcast, Rise Up, See Red. It's anywhere you can get a podcast. And then on Twitter, you can find me at Senor Jess Root, S-E-N-O-R, Jess Root. That's on Twitter.
All right, Jess. Well, thanks for joining the show. As a Niner fan, we hope Jimmy has a big day against the Cardinals defense.
He had his best days against the Cardinals defense.
And Jess, I'm hoping I'll see you down October 25th when the Seattle Seahawks venture down to play the Cardinals. So great. Good luck this season. Hopefully we'll have you guys on again. Appreciate the content. Good luck with the podcast and keep doing what you're doing.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Take care.